The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author.
Episode 28, An Unstoppable Storm.
Colonel Boyne, sir. Sector 1 reports heavy contact. They are suffering extreme casualties and are regrouping to their fallback positions. The urgent shout from his communications officer snapped Boynes from his reverie. Put it up on screen, he called, sitting down heavily in his chair. All about him, the crew of the Divinity worked frantically to coordinate the different battle groups of the new, uneasy alliance. He cast a quick glance to Major Hawking, sat anxiously at his left-hand side, then turned to his right where Vladich waited impassively. The raven-haired man gave Boynes a reassuring smile and a slight nod of the head. Boynes took a deep breath. The screen flickered into life, filling a good portion of the far wall. In the distance could be seen Sector 1, Palmer's Point, and their first line of defence. Boynes had hoped to disrupt the momentum of his enemy's charge, and considered the high point would prove to have a good strategic value. But it had not been an easy decision to order his men to that place. They were terribly exposed, and already he could see that the dark wall of the oncoming army had almost completely surrounded the promontory.
"Sir, the Herald is approaching range," called an officer.
"Very well. Inform all batteries to prepare to fire upon the Herald. Concentrate all fire upon the Herald." Boyne sat anxiously in his chair, staring unblinkingly at the screen, trying to make out their former flagship at the head of the approaching army. And slowly she appeared from the wall of dust and flames, a malevolent black shadow which hung impossibly in the air.
"Target in range, sir,"
stuttered the weapons officer, like all men on the ship, still in a state of disbelief that they would fire upon their own flagship and their own comrades. Boynes put his head in his hands for a moment, then straightened up. "Fire," he croaked in a hoarse whisper.
Spears pushed himself onwards, a proud, shining god at the head of his triumphant army. His forces crashed upon the promontory of rock which heralded his enemy's first defences, falling upon his foes like a tidal wave. But Spears ignored the first fighting. His attention was set solely upon his prize, the Divinity, where that fool Boynes cowered in fear at the ground-shaking onslaught of Spears's forces. He shifted his perception through his ship's systems, concentrating upon her scanners and radar. He felt the limp minds of his crew, unable to resist him as he bent them to his will. He revelled in their suffering. Soon all would be under his power. His mind sprang out across the red rock. There was the Divinity, cowering high up in the cliffs behind the British entry point. Spears grinned wide with malice as his ship surged forwards towards the defenders, the screaming chaos of his army at his back. He felt the first sting of gunfire upon the ship as if it were his own skin, and this drove him to a rage. Viciously he spat back at the tiny figures in their trenches, and a devastating volley of firepower was unleashed from his guns. All about him the plain erupted in a hail of incoming fire. The defenders were well dug in, and concentrated their fire upon him. He saw field ships shooting down at him from high up in the cliffs, and tanks blasted at him from their dugouts. And everywhere infantry shot their stinging blasts. There were hundreds of them, all shooting at him, and for a second Spears was afraid. The hail of fire was unrelenting, and he screamed in frustration. He was still almost 100 yards from their positions. With a shriek of despair, Spears paused, lowering his hot metal ship to the earth, allowing his army to stream past and around him, shielding him from the guns. It was no matter, thought Spears furiously. His army was unstoppable. It would crush the defenders where they grovelled in their trenches. He vowed that not a single soul would survive. He would clear the way to the doorway for his beautiful mistress, and then perhaps they would marry and rule together, king and queen. He laughed again in his triumph and urged his armies on.
"Here they come!"
screamed Boris in blind fury. He charged his rifle and pointed it into the churning, rolling thundercloud, which hurtled towards their positions high up amid the rocks and boulders of Palmer's Point. Dan stood next to the big man,
his body shaking as tears streamed down his cheeks. The tumbling red wall of dust and ash engulfed their positions upon the promontory, which rose out of the chaos like an island in a storm.
"There! Straight ahead!"
yelled Boris, unleashing a ferocious blast of energy from his squat-muzzled gun. The shots disappeared into the howling storm, which billowed all about them, and then the clouds erupted in a blinding flash as they found their target. Dan looked on, awestruck, as the smoke burned away to reveal the silhouette of a creature the size of a double-decker bus. Hundreds of limbs and spines sprouted from its pulsating, slug-like body, which it dragged over the cracked earth towards them. From a forest of vicious barbs at the front of the creature, there snapped a double row of mandibles and claws. Instead of teeth, its dripping maw was lined with human hands, which flailed and grasped, blindly groping for a victim to drag into its hideous mouth.
"Fire, goddammit!"
screamed Boris, as he loosed off shot after shot, the massive bulk of the creature heaving itself inevitably towards them. The energy blast burst all over the creature, snapping off spines and limbs, but still it came on, dragging its bulk up the rocky incline towards them. Dan felt as if his mind was snapping. All around him, he saw a hail of fire erupting into the oncoming hordes, but it was as nothing compared to the sheer numbers which assailed them. His brain ceased to take in the myriad shifting forms, which threw themselves at the outcrop of rock, or charged past, on towards the doorway. Everything became a blurred red haze before his eyes. Dimly he heard Boris shout again, and he was vaguely aware of the big man dragging him down behind the wall of their rocky trench. Sounds came to him as if he were underwater. He caught a glimpse of the spiny monster before them, barely 30 feet away. The forepart of its grub-like body hunched briefly as it coiled itself up, the spines on its body sticking outwards like those of a hedgehog. With a dull grunt, it fired a deadly shower of barbs towards them. The instant Dan hit the red earth of the trench, he came back to his senses.
"You saved my..."
he began, then caught Boris's concerned gasp. A bony spine, like a thorn, 18 inches in length, protruded from Dan's shoulder.
"Oh, shit!"
he gasped.
"Boris!"
He fell back against the wall of the trench in shock, as the pain began to register. It felt like a white-hot nail had been driven through him, and his left arm hung limp at his side.
"Boris!"
he screamed in panic, the tear in his suit bubbling and frothing.
"Shut up and hold on!"
cursed Boris, leaning over him. He grasped the spine with both hands. Dan looked at him in horror.
"What the fuck are you?"
he screamed in agony as Boris wrenched the barb free. There was a peculiar feeling of scurrying within his suit, a tickling sensation as things unseen flitted over his body.
"Boris!"
he yelled again, then fell back, gasping. The strained sensation had gone, and he was left only with the familiar feeling of pain. Boris looked long into his eyes.
"You all right?" he grunted suspiciously.
Dan nodded painfully, looking down gingerly at his shoulder. Boris had stuck some sort of sealing patch over the hole in his suit.
"You sure?" he asked again.
"It's just pain,"
gasped Dan, trying to smile through his clenched teeth.
"What is this stuff?"
he croaked, looking at the patch on his shoulder.
"You've got a lot to learn,"
grunted Boris, and hefted his weapon, once more pouring fire onto the approaching monsters. Dan lay in the bottom of the trench, his head swimming with the agony of his shoulder. He felt a surge of fury as the ground shook with the slow approach of the monsters. Further down the trench, he could see his companions falling back towards the highest parts of Palmer's Point as the creatures breached their defences. He cursed quietly and pulled himself painfully to his feet with his good arm. The enormous bulk of the slug-like monster loomed over them, barely 20 feet away. Boris screamed with rage as he fired shot after shot into the beast's open mouth, but still it pushed on through the explosions. Dan swayed and leaned heavily against the side of the trench. He managed to heft his rifle one-handed onto the lip of the wall and open fire.
"Good! Good!"
laughed Boris heartily.
"Let them have it!"
They stood before the massive creature, laughing and shouting in mad fury as the ground shook and the air rang with the chaos of explosions and the shrill screams of the creatures. But it was hopeless. Although they pushed the creature back with their fire, overall it seemed relatively unscathed by their shots. Slowly and inevitably it dragged its steaming bulk nearer. Boris looked in frustration at his hissing rifle. The energy pack was depleted. He had run out of shots. He turned grimly to Dan, who continued to fire desperately at the approaching creature.
"Better save 2 shots,
said Boris gently, and unslung his power pack, tossing his rifle to the floor with a sigh. Dan stopped firing, and turned to the big man, who still looked down at the bulky power pack in disgust. A pained grin spread over Dan's face, as with a faint ray of desperate hope he kicked the release panel on the back of the pack. The panel sprang open to reveal the rifle's power unit, a small cylinder about the size of a flask, which hissed and smoked in the hostile atmosphere. He bent down and grabbed it, flinging it over the edge of the trench with a grunt of pain. The creature was barely 10 feet away from them. They could feel the heat emanating from its skin, even through their padded suits.
"Looks like you've got a thing or two to learn too,"
gasped Dan, swinging his rifle back over the trench with his good arm. Boris flung himself to the floor as Dan pulled lightly on the trigger, blasting the power unit which had landed directly under the monster as it rose up over them. Boris just had time to drag Dan to the ground as the air erupted in a sheet of flames all about. The side of the trench caved in, covering them with rock and dust as the shockwave cut through the hordes of creatures. Dan dug himself out from under a pile of debris, struggling with his good arm. There was a heaving of earth next to him as Boris pulled himself to his feet, and together they looked out upon the scene in amazement. Gone were any signs of the creatures in 100-foot radius. Around the blast zone, there was still a wall of red dust and smoke which crackled and burned as the hordes fought on. They were slowly overpowering the tired defenders, and pushing them further back up the heights of Palmer's Point, which was now totally surrounded. But in the circle of the blast, the remains of at least 50 creatures were scattered across the slopes. Dismembered corpses were strewn upon the red rocks in a scene of grisly carnage. Dan turned to Boris open-mouthed, then let out a whoop of joy.
"Ha! Take that, you bastards!"
he cried in crazed exhilaration.
"Come on! Come on!"
He pumped his fists in the air and slumped back against the battered trench wall, laughing and sobbing in pain and relief.
"We must go while we can," muttered Boris urgently, and helping Dan back to his feet, they stumbled off up the slopes towards the pinnacle of Palmer's Point, where the last remnants of the defenders still clung on.
"They're overrunning our positions on all fronts, sir,"
yelled the panicking officer over the chaos of the control room.
"We can't hold them off. The infantry are falling back at the entry point, but losses are heavy."
Colonel Boynes held his aching head in his hands. The onslaught seemed unstoppable. The army of creatures were forcing their way inevitably towards the entry point, crushing the defenders as they went. He watched the viewscreen as a colossal, lumbering monster the size of a house crashed its impossible weight down upon the top of an armoured vehicle. The area erupted in a ball of flames, sending shrapnel flying high into the sky. All about, soldiers ran desperately back towards the higher ground, as troops up in the cliff continued to pour fire down upon the attackers. A huge creature, like a giant earthworm with a lizard's head, screamed and writhed in agony as it burned in the flames of the defenders' energy blasts. It thrashed its monstrous body in blind fury, crushing men or sending them flying as they ran for their lives. An enormous animal, spider-like but with giant humanoid limbs, pulled its scaly bulk through the carnage. Spiny mandibles covered its underbelly, and it lashed out with these, stabbing and slashing as it pushed its way through the trenches. A field ship made a desperate attempt to focus its fire upon the hideous creature, but it flew too close, and a swipe from one of its many limbs sent it spiraling to the earth in flames. Boynes looked on in horror. The path between the creature and the entry point looked woefully underdefended. He grabbed his helmet from behind his seat and began fastening it in place.
"Prepare to lift off,"
he yelled above the chaos.
"All personnel suit up!"
The crew of the control room frantically pulled on their helmets as the ship lurched into the air, followed by its escort of one of the few remaining field ships.
"Get in front of it!"
yelled Boynes.
"It can't be allowed to reach the entry point!"
The horizon swung crazily as the massive ship lowered itself between the doorway and the lumbering monster.
"Fire all weapons!"
barked Boynes. The control room shuddered and rocked as the Divinity and her escort poured shot after shot onto the oncoming beast at point-blank range. But still it came on. The monster roared in fury, its legs cracked and splintered, and a whole area of its body blossomed in flame, leaking black smoke into the air. But still it pushed towards them. Massive as the ship was, the creature loomed over them, casting a dark shadow. Boynes looked wildly to his side where Vladich sat, his face hidden behind his glowing green goggles and respirator.
"You've done well, my friend,"
shouted Vladich above the din.
"But I fear we were doomed from the beginning."
Boynes grinned wildly.
"Then at least we can go out with a fight,"
he laughed.
"Prepare to ram,"
he shouted.
"Engines full forward. Brace for impact."
The ship surged forward on a roar of its engines, its great mass ploughing into the body of the monster. There was a hideous cracking of bone and chitin, and the whole ship rocked violently, throwing the crew about the control room. Explosions erupted from all angles, and alarms and sirens blared crazily. But still the ship ploughed on, knocking the monster backwards with a terrifying scream. Then, with a lazy swipe from one of its legs, the monster struck the side of the ship with a devastating blow. The entire vessel lurched as its hull crumpled, and the divinity fell from the sky with an ear-splitting crash, sending up rock and debris in a great cloud which blocked out the sun. Quicker than Thomas's eye could follow, the girl launched herself at the angel. She seemed to increase with size as she flung herself across the red rock with a deafening scream of pure hatred. Thomas fell to his knees, covering his head with his arms in a vain attempt to block out the sound. The two figures collided with a ground-shaking crash, and the circle of creatures around them were flung outwards with the force of their impact. Grace knelt beside Thomas, and they cowered together in the eye of the storm as angel and demon wrestled above them, locked in a titanic struggle. Rocks splintered and burst as they struck them, rolling on the floor and flinging themselves into the air in a desperate battle. Thomas opened his eyes and looked up in terror as the huge figures writhed about them. The sight of the naked girl was terrifying. She hissed and spat in fury, her nails ripping at the corroded armor of the angel. As soon as it seemed to have a grip on her slight form, she would twist manically away and launch herself back at it with her fists and nails. They rolled over and over upon the cracking earth, the great bulk of the angel dark and ungainly against the pale skin of the demon. Suddenly, the angel forced its weight onto her, pinning her to the smoking earth by the neck. The ferocity and madness drained from her body, and she went limp, beaten. The hatred fell from her features, and there she was, a fearful, innocent girl trapped by her throat. The angel paused, its shoulders heaving in exhaustion and relief. Thomas got shakily to his feet, as a deathly silence fell across the plains. There was no sign of movement from the surrounding armies. All waited in expectation and disbelief. The angel turned its head slowly towards Thomas, still breathing heavily. Thomas looked down to where the girl lay, her neck clamped in a huge metal fist. For a second, a glimmer of menace flickered across her features, then a cruel smile split her face. Thomas opened his mouth to shout a warning, but it was too late. As the angel turned back to view the girl, she slipped an arm free and tore at the angel's helmet, pulling it from its head. She screamed with delight as the angel held its hands to its face, bellowing in agony and rolling off her. In an instant, the demon was standing, looking down upon the angel as it writhed. She placed a slender foot upon its neck and bent down, ripping the metal gauntlets from the angel's hands as it cried out in distress. The delicate white skin blistered and cracked in the atmosphere.
"Know my pain at last, fair brother," she sneered, her fevered eyes glowing in triumph. "Ever have we fought ourselves, when our suffering was the only thing dividing us. Taste the sweet agony, and hide no more."
She cruelly twisted her foot upon the angel's neck. It tore its hands from its face and looked up through blistering eyes. Thomas lifted his own hands to the sides of his helmet, quietly twisting the locking bolts as he stared in horror at the scene. He felt a gentle hand upon his arm.
"Thomas, no, not like this," Grace whispered tenderly in his ear.
He turned to look at her with tears in his eyes. Yet inwardly he felt strangely calm and distant.
"Everyone, they're all gone," he croaked. "All my life I've removed myself from everything around me. I've been too afraid to act on anything. I can't take any more violence. I've watched them all die around me, and I was too scared to help. I can't take any more, Grace."
He silenced the alarms in his earpiece as he flicked off the safety protocols on the release catches of his helmet. He looked tenderly into Grace's eyes as she wept by his side.
"I understand what Alex said before he died. They need our fear. They can't have mine anymore."
"Thomas, no."
It was the croak of the angel's voice, staring through tears which burnt its skin. The demon looked around and regarded Thomas. Her expression of triumph changed to curiosity for a moment.
"I'm not afraid anymore,"
whispered Thomas, and lifted off his helmet. Dan Carpaza looked back over his shoulder as they stumbled upwards. Already the dust was rolling over the clearing as the hordes closed in behind them. They reached the uppermost heights of Palmer's Point, and Dan slumped on a narrow ledge, exhausted from the climb and loss of blood. Boris had found himself another rifle, and had joined the last group of survivors in a ring around the summit. Here, high above the plains, they had broken out to the dark clouds, which hung below them like a black sea of ash and flames. Dan squinted in the bright sunlight, gazing about the plain in awe. The entire space between Palmer's Point and the entry point was an endless mass of writhing creatures and flames. He saw flashes and explosions all about the doorway, and wondered how the defenders were faring. He spied at least 5 field ships flitting about the maelstrom, flames spitting from their guns as they poured fire down upon the monsters. He looked back to the ring of fighters around the summit of Palmer's Point. The steep, rocky slope prevented the largest demons from making a concerted attack, but still they poured forwards in a slow and steady stream. Another bright explosion went up as a group of defenders focused their fire upon a strange, scorpion-like creature, which fell back in a ball of flames, but 3 more hideous creatures quickly took its place. Dan gazed back across the plain. There seemed no end to the vast army. He saw the hopelessness of their position. With a quiet curse, he struggled to his feet, intent upon making a last stand with his newfound comrades. A glint of sun on metal caught his eye, way off in the distance. His heart sank in despair, as over the far ridge of the gently sloping valley, a whole new dark band of figures marched into view. He felt the ground shake with their heavy tread.
"It's not fair," he croaked to himself.
"Give us a chance,"
he yelled to the sky in anger and despair. But something was different. These figures appeared unlike the attacking hordes. They were humanoid, but vast, clad in massive, armored suits of corroded metal, making it difficult to tell if they were alive or machines. 100 of them stood at the crest of the hill, a ragged line surveying the scene. Then, with a single voice that split the air, they charged down into the darkness. But Dan didn't wait to see any more. He was running down to join his comrades, yelling and screaming, gesticulating with his good arm.
"The angels!" he shouted in joy to his startled companions. "The angels are here! The angels are here to save us!"
Colonel Boynes looked drunkenly about him in the darkness. Small fires raged all about the control room, which lay at a sickening angle. He hung in the straps of his chair, winded but otherwise unharmed.
"Abandon ship!"
he called over the intercom, but he couldn't tell whether or not the ship's system still worked. To one side, Major Hawking was unbuckling himself from his seat, but to the other, Vladich slumped unmoving in his chair. A large piece of shrapnel jutted gruesomely from his chest, and Boynes cursed quietly to himself as he struggled towards the escape hatch with the other crew members. They staggered out of the ship, ready to run for their lives from the monster which had crushed their vessel. It towered high above them, and the crew panicked, fleeing desperately back towards the doorway. But Colonel Boynes simply stood, staring up at the monolithic beast in awe and confusion. The creature raised a gigantic foot, and the ground shook as it came crashing down.
"It's turning round,"
breathed Colonel Boynes, a look of incredulity upon his face.
"They're retreating! They're retreating!"
he shouted for joy at the top of his voice. Sure enough, the army was turning, falling back from the entry point. In the distance, Boynes thought he could discern flashes of gunfire far out on the plain. The hordes appeared to be turning to face new attackers. And right in the center of the plain, he could make out a bright light gathering in intensity as it expanded over the dark hordes. He could hear triumphant voices cheering in his ears, joyful cries of hope from the defenders. The monsters were retreating. A low howl of wind began to blow, slowly circling Thomas, whipping the dust around him as he dropped his helmet to the floor. The demon laughed contemptuously where she stood, glaring in malicious joy.
"I'm not afraid anymore," whispered Thomas again, and stepped towards the demon.
The wind increased to a scream, and suddenly burst outwards from Thomas's body. A searing light cascaded out from him, tearing across the plain and over the hordes of creatures. Grace lay pressed to the ground by the force of the blast. She shielded her eyes from the light, and saw the small silhouette of Sullivan slowly approaching the two great figures. The demon stared down at him, a look of triumph wavering towards uncertainty.
"What are you doing?"
she screamed in disbelief, taking several steps backwards. The angel coughed and spluttered upon its release.
"I'm not afraid," came Thomas's quiet voice, somehow carried above the deafening scream of the gale.
He bent down to where the angel lay, helping it slowly to its feet. At first the angel shied away from Thomas's touch, but where his hands held the blistered skin, the lesions melted away to leave it white and unblemished. The demon screamed in hatred, and Grace covered her head and shook at the sound.
"What are you doing?"
cried the demon, her face contorting in fear.
"Hate me,"
she screamed, a lunge forwards, lashing out with her nails at Thomas's unprotected face.
"Hate me!"
She struck with all her force and hatred. Thomas stood looking up at her, with the same calm expression of understanding. He didn't even flinch. Her blow stopped a fraction of an inch from his face. She screamed and went to tear at his eyes, but stopped a moment before she touched, when he again made no move to defend himself.
"I'm not afraid anymore,"
Thomas whispered again like a mantra, and delicately embraced the towering figure of the demon. For a moment she screamed in terror, thrashing desperately with her arms to escape or injure him, but slowly her fear subsided to quiet sobs as the light around Thomas's body increased in intensity.
"Hate me,"
she whimpered over the roar of the wind. Grace half closed her eyes against the glare as the demon slowly expanded with the light, whilst at the same time melting into Thomas's body. In a moment, she was gone. At Thomas's side stood the angel, its face pale and beautiful, fully restored now from injury. Its dark black eyes had no whites and seemed filled with the world's sorrow. It looked down at Thomas, smiling a sad smile, nodding slowly in understanding. Thomas glanced back at Grace and smiled also. She could barely see him through the brilliant light which radiated out of his body. But as she looked on, she saw the angel slowly removing its armor, unfurling from the constraints of its suit. It moved its pale, slender limbs, regarding them with marvel, the first time it had seen them unprotected and undamaged in the field since the beginning of the Age of Humans. From its back, a bright glow of ephemeral wings unfolded, and the angel's laughter rang around the plains. Grace looked around in wonder. She lay upon the familiar lush grass she had encountered when she had made that first trip into the heaven field. Flowers blossomed forth in a cascade of magnificent colour. The black clouds which had obscured the sun were ripped away to reveal an immaculate sunrise. The angel walked forward a step into Thomas's embrace, and the light was too much to bear. Grace thought she would pass out or go mad as the light burned through her eyelids and into her mind. Then suddenly it was still. The light had gone out, and the wind disappeared. There was a muffled thud as Thomas slumped onto the grass and lay still. Spears fled for his life over heaving red rock, the stinging burn of gunfire at his back, pushing him on through his impotent terror. His once proud horde scattered about him, shaking the earth and sending up a chaos of choking dust. Their voices blended into a single trumpet roar of despair which hung over the rout like a thunderstorm. Spears desperately tried to coerce the will of his forces, but to no avail. The link was severed, his mistress's voice had been silenced, and now he began to realize the illusion of the power he had once held. It had been she who had held sway over the forces. It had been she that had shaped his confidence, made him feel like a god. But now there was no voice within him. He saw himself in his true form and was aghast. A shriveled ghost sucking upon the lives of his crew, trapped in the life of his ship. He tried to shriek, but his throat was stuffed full of the same fronds which emanated out from his body, enshrouding him, hooking him into the ship. He pushed his will onward with all his might and the ship lurched forward, scattering the fleeing monsters before him. Soon he would be out onto the plain, leaving behind the new enemies, the ones who shone with a light too powerful to gaze upon, who crashed down into the battle plain, scything into the monstrous hordes with the battle cry that split the very rocks. Soon he was free from the morass of retreating beasts, and was speeding over the cracked earth, searching for a place to hide and recover his strength. He would crawl into a dark place and lick his wounds. He would ponder upon his defeat, and upon the revenge he would wreak upon his miserable enemies. Starling sat with his back against the high cliff, wearily surveying the bizarre scene out across the plain. A myriad pillars of smoke curled lazily into the bright, sunlit sky, but even now it was hard to see the burning corpses of the monsters which had so recently fallen. Already they were disappearing under a carpet of lush green grass, interspersed with white and yellow flowers. All signs of life in the plain had gone. The army of angels had disappeared as quickly as they had arrived, chasing off the last of the defeated hordes. But even with the battle won, there had been little time for celebration. There were the wounded to tend to and the evacuation to organise. Tests had revealed that the doorway was failing from its resonant state, and Gary had been given the task of coordinating the hurried evacuation fieldside. The last of the soldiers were queuing now for their return to Maundsworth, the remaining field ships and vehicles discarded behind them like empty husks. Starling nudged idly at a mound with his foot. He saw that it was an empty helmet, with tufts of grass sprouting from its cracked visor. It was a British design, he thought wearily to himself. He may have recognised the soldier who had once worn it, but now there was no trace of its former owner. Starling let out a long, exhausted sigh and pushed himself to his feet. His legs ached painfully. He bent to pick up his rifle from the ground, and then stopped. He'd been forced to fight in the end, he thought with a grim smile, and had acquitted himself well in the chaos. But the gun didn't really suit him. He unslung the heavy power pack and dumped it unceremoniously upon the ground. Taking a last look around, he said his goodbyes to the Heavenfield and followed the last of the soldiers through the doorway. Thomas slowly opened his eyes. The bright white lights of the infirmary dazzled him. He looked around. Grace sat next to him, holding his hand. His suit lay in a heap by the side of his bed. Medical personnel bustled around him in the background.
"What happened?"
he croaked. His whole body ached with fatigue.
"Oh, Thomas,"
sighed Grace in relief. Her face was careworn and haggard, and her eyes were red from crying, but they still sparkled with life.
"It's good to have you back again." "How did we manage to get out of the field?"
he managed to whisper.
"Some soldiers brought us back,"
she replied tenderly.
"They all appeared again when you, did whatever it was you did."
She placed a reassuring hand upon his brow. Thomas felt waves of calm flowing over him.
"Is it over?"
he managed, drifting off once more towards sleep. His eyes felt heavy, pushing him down into darkness.
"Yes, it's over," sighed Grace. "After that girl creature disappeared, the monsters seemed to lose direction. Then when the angels turned up, well, it was a rout."
"The angel!"
exclaimed Thomas in alarm, trying to sit up. Grace gently pushed him back into his pillows.
"It's okay, Thomas," she soothed. "It's gone now. They've all gone. The others disappeared, chasing off the retreating army. Then, when the doorway started to fail and we had to evacuate everybody, so, yes, there's no going back. It's over."
Grace stared sadly into space as she listened to the finality of her own words.
"But Commander James is preparing discussions with the Americans and Vladich's men, so at least they're talking. The political crisis appears to be blowing over."
"And Sanders?"
he muttered wearily.
"No, he's fine," smiled Grace. "You can see him later if you want."
"That's good,"
he croaked, opening his eyes a little as a glimmer of light caught his attention. He smiled, looking about at the dancing rays which formed around a figure who sat quietly behind Grace. As he fought his weariness, he realised it was Susan, looking on from the corner of the room. Thomas gasped as the lights danced around the two women's heads like sun on clear water.
"What is it, Thomas?"
whispered Grace in concern, seeing his eyes flutter about as he spied invisible things.
"Are you all right?"
Thomas let his heavy lids fall shut. There was an expression of wonder and contentment on his tired face.
"I see angels,"
he whispered, and fell into a deep sleep of exquisite dreams.
Thank you.